The court will proceed to the second case of the day, Farfaras v. Citizens Bank and Trust. Mr. Neumeister.
May it please the court.
Good morning.
Counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Dave Neumeister on behalf of the defendants. I am here this morning, quite honestly, to talk to Your Honors about money. There are a lot of issues in this appeal, but what I'd really like to spend my time focusing on are the attorney's fees and the compensatory and punitive damages awards. Well, if you look at the attorney's fees award, the problem we have, what the district court did, is when it reached its lodestar figure, it included too many hours that weren't acceptably or sufficiently documented. Now, it made some deductions based on some tasks or certain projects that it viewed that excessive time was put in, and that's fine as far as it goes. But our specific quarrel here is with the fact that the district court allowed a lot of fees and failed to deduct a lot of hours, probably to the tune of in excess of $300,000, that just weren't sufficiently documented.
How long was this trial?
I believe it was a little better than a week. I don't know exactly, Judge Sykes, but it was a little better than a week.
And the number of hours in the fee award is something over 1,300 hours?
Something to that effect, yes.
Which is something on the order of 30 or 32 full-time weeks invested in this case, which took a little better than a week to try.
Again, my statement that was a little better than a week is an approximation because I don't know the exact number of days as I stand before you to make a representation. But yeah, your representation of the number of hours is correct in terms of trial preparation and all the procedural work that went into preparing the case for trial, yes.
Could you give us a broad estimate of the discovery involved in the case?
The discovery involved in the case?
Like number of witnesses, number of venues, you know, just some sense of that.
Well, the venue, it was all in Chicago, Judge Flaum. It's a local case. There was no one called in from outside. I don't believe there was anything on the order of experts that were called in. It all involved fact witnesses of one kind or another.
How many depositions?
I believe the number of depositions, approximately 20. I don't know the exact number, but approximating.
So 20 witnesses were deposed?
Approximately.
Did any of those depositions take more than a day?
That I don't know. But based on the number of witnesses that were put on at trial and the extent of the trial testimony, I don't think any of them would have taken more than a day. I don't see the need that they would have.
Well, considering our standard of review of the discretion exercised by the district judge, don't you think you have to favor us with sort of a cutting analysis of the number of witnesses, time, you know?
That was done, Your Honor, in the post-trial briefs on the attorney's fees issue before the district court, and that we've cited to in the record. I believe it's docket entry 111, but in our response to the plaintiff's
why don't you
for
point,
attorney's fees.
If you would, Mr. Mishra, why don't you point to the one or two areas where you think specifically the judge in his review, Judge Leinenweber, miscalculated based on the numbers submitted for the fees?
I wouldn't call it a miscalculation, but we have two basic problems with what the district court did. And one of those is block billing, and we've addressed that on page 36 of our appellant's brief. We've pulled out some specific entries that are representative of those we take issue with, that point out the nature of the block billing entries that we contest. The problem is that there are substantial blocks of time that are billed for what look like multiple tasks with only very cursory descriptions, so that it's pretty difficult to tell what exactly was done. Those are the types of entries that were disallowed in the Cristancho decision. Now, granted, that's only a district court case, but it does provide a good illustration of how the block billing issues should be approached. And the district court really didn't do that here. The second category is on page 37 of our brief, where we address that and we talk about the vague and ambiguous billing entries. And those are a little bit more substantial, or quite a bit more substantial, of the amount of money we're talking about in terms of about $285,000 that we think the district court didn't miscalculate but should have just not factored into its calculation because the descriptions were so vague and ambiguous.
So on the fees issue, you're looking for a remand to the district court for another look?
That's right.
Okay.
Remand to the district court to reduce the attorney's fees award based on whatever instruction that Your Honors would see fit to give.
Okay. Now, you're not challenging the use of block billing generally, are you?
The use of block billing generally?
Well, didn't you use block billing? Didn't the plaintiff use block billing in submitting under Local Rule 54.3.5?
Your question is, didn't the defense, our firm, use block billing entries as well? In a case of this magnitude...
That's why I'm not being critical if you did. I'm just asking, are you challenging the block billing as an item to be submitted to a court when considering attorney's fees? That's all.
Not as a general matter as a whole, that any block billing is per se unacceptable. But it's the extent of what went on here. I mean, in a case of this magnitude, from the defense side, did that happen to a certain extent? I think it probably did. But I don't think it was anywhere near the magnitude that we're looking at in terms of the attorney's fees that are at issue here. And, of course, the defense attorney's fees wasn't part of the award.
No, I understand.
It wasn't calculated into that. So, no, the practice of block billing just as a practice, I don't think it is unacceptable per se. But in this case, the extent to which it was done and the extent to which it comprised the attorney's fees award, I think warrants another look by the district court.
So in a proposed remand, is it your suggestion that we specifically direct the district court to break apart the block billing or make inquiry in that regard? Is that what you're saying?
That would be helpful, yes. If the district court's going to undertake these attorney's fees on an entry-by-entry basis, which it appears that's the approach it decided to take. I mean, that's an acceptable approach, but it has to actually, put a little more into it than it did, I think. With regard to what it did strike, it took into account certain specific entries as far as determining if there were, duplicative or excessive entries done for any one or more specific tasks. If it's going to undertake that kind of analysis, I think it's incumbent on it to take a look at least a little closer, the entries that we've contested with regard to the block billing and the vague and ambiguous billing entries. Now, the other money issue, or another money issue we're talking about here, is the compensatory damages award. I think the award of $200,000 against the individual defendants was excessive based on at least one of the criteria involved in evaluating those awards. And the one I'm really focusing on is being roughly comparable to awards that were entered in similar cases. And the cases we cited on our appellant's brief show smaller awards, I think, based on similar facts. Now, I'm not trying to downplay the plaintiff's situation here, but awards that approached or exceeded $200,000 generally involved what I think seem to be more serious circumstances. For example, here, the plaintiff really didn't suffer any physical harm. Her financial situation really wasn't threatened. There was no quid pro quo, sexual harassment, and none of her personal property was damaged. If we take a look at the cases that resulted in awards that approached or exceeded $200,000, I think generally you find that at least one of those characteristics is present. And the facts of this case, I think, are more in line with those that entered smaller awards. So the district court, I think, abused its discretion in that regard also in failing to remit or reduce the compensatory damages award. So finally, we come to punitive damages. The problem that we have here is that punitive damages are not supposed to duplicate a compensatory award. And that was the caution of the U.S. Supreme Court in State Farm versus Campbell. In this case, the compensatory award really did not involve any components or significant components of traditional economic damages, such as past and future medical expenses, property damage, and the like. What we have here is more awards, or the award that instead was made up principally of non-economic components, such as pain and suffering, humiliation, emotional distress, and the similar non-economic damages that.
Were you able to locate any cases which struck down a punitive damages award as unconstitutional under the BMW versus Gore standard and the State Farm versus Campbell standard, where the punitive damage award was half of the compensatory damages?
No. We're not able to locate such a case, Judge.
Okay. Usually those punitive damages awards that are struck down are exponentially larger.
True. You're correct, Judge Sykes.
So you're swimming upstream on this one. Would you concede that?
I would concede that based on the standards of review and based on the cases that are out there, I have a heavy burden, Your Honor. I would agree with you.
Okay. Fair.
I think, though, the most telling factor about the duplicative issue is if you look at the evidence that the plaintiff cites in support of both of the awards, she cites the same evidence in support of the compensatory and the punitive award. I think that the district court, or the jury rather, when it enters its compensatory award, looked at basically the same evidence and fixed its a dollar figure based on the compensatory damages and basically then looked at the same evidence with the punitive award. That's why I think the duplicative aspects warrant at least another look by the district court and remitted or, to, or remand to consider that. And also, if you look at the factors in Campbell that measure the reprehensibility of a party's conduct, that also could counsel in favor of a lower award. I think only one of those factors is really present here, and that would be the repeated incidence of the conduct at issue. And there is language in Campbell to the effect that if you only have one of those factors, then the punitive award could be questioned. So based on those facts, I think it warrants a remand to the district court to look at the punitive award again. I think it was an abuse of discretion for the district court to let this punitive award stand in this current state. I am prepared to stand on my briefs as to the rest of the issues that I've raised, unless Your Honors have any other questions for me.
Apparently not.
Then I will see you for a brief rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Theobald?
May it please the court, Mr. Neumeister. To address the backwards, the punitive damage argument the counsel made, I really don't understand it when he's talking about the same evidence. Of course, in this case of when my client was battered, assaulted, and sexually harassed on a daily basis at work by the three most powerful people at the bank, the president of the bank, the chairman of the board, another owner and director of the bank. The acts formed the basis of the harm that she endured. And it is incorrect to say there was no physical harm here. This girl had men putting her hands up her skirt on a regular basis, grabbing her breasts, and not in some hallway, right in the lobby of the bank. For other employees, Beata Blazek testified that this happened. They did it. They acted above the law. And to say there was no physical harm the testimony from her, Jennifer Papyrus, her mother, her friends, was that she couldn't sleep. She was distraught. She was very attractive before all this happened. She gained a substantial amount of weight. So when a man's grabbing your breasts and putting his hands up your skirt and laughing, I don't think that's an accurate statement. There was no physical harm to her in not being able to sleep and going to work with little or no sleep. On the compensatory damage argument that the defendants are making, it's a lot of generalities, but there really hasn't been any cases cited by the defendant that are even close to this case that have the degree of outrageous and disgusting conduct by these three defendants, Robert Michael, George Michael, and Nicholas Tanglis. The cases that the defendants rely on primarily are cases where an individual worked at a place of employment for less than 3 weeks. This harassment and grabbing and touching and seduction for her to go on their boat with them occurred over a year and in front of other bank employees. So the comparison cases, they're not even close. And to answer your question, Judge Sykes, there was a 4-day jury trial.
Okay.
And the fees that the defendants billed the insurance company was slightly under $300,000. Judge Landwehr did not reduce the fees based upon any vagueness or ambiguous entries. He reduced my fees and my paralegal's time because he believed in certain instances we spent too much time on some tasks. But he was required, the district court was required, to review the entire fee petition line by line because the local rule 54.3 requirements of the parties broke down and we never received what the defendant believed the plaintiff should receive. We had difficulty getting their information to the point where we just had to submit the matters unilaterally, and the defendants objected to all the fees. So Judge Leinweber had to spend a considerable amount of time going through the entire petition and looking at everything. And what Judge Leinweber said about the description of the items is what they were not ambiguous, they were detailed, and that the defendants' entries were very similar to the plaintiff's entries. So,
how many depositions were taken?
There wasn't 20. I don't think it was that. It could be close to that, but I don't. 20 doesn't sound right. I don't have the number. I did the whole case. No one else did it, other than a paralegal with me. But maybe 15 or so.
Could you tell us, Mr. Theobald, over what period of time that those depositions transpired?
Well, we filed the EEOC charge in 2001, and the case was tried in September of last year. The depositions were taken in 2003 and 2004, Your Honor. And I would like to stand on my brief. Basically, I don't think this appeal should have been filed. I really don't. There weren't any evidentiary errors that I saw in this case raised to a magnitude of reversal, and I think that of all the cases that both sides have cited, I don't think that there is a case that we could look to and say that the damages should be reduced because this individual was hurt more than my client. This girl sustained tremendous damage to her. And their conduct was outrageous. So I would stand on my brief unless the court has any other questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Siebel.
Thank you.
Mr. Neumeister?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you again. All I have by way of rebuttal is we understand why the judge made the reductions that he made on the attorney's fees because, in his estimation, some of the tasks or the time spent on some of these tasks were excessive, and he cut some of that time. we only submit again that if he's going to do this on an entry by entry basis, the amount of attorney's fees that were claimed and awarded, especially in the large amount that were block billed or inadequately described, warrant a lot more scrutiny than they got. And that's borne out by the size of the award and also by, I think, the district court's description, rather inadequate description in his order, that basically says these other fees that are contested based on block billing or ambiguous billing are okay. I don't think that got the scrutiny it deserved. This court's always stood as a check on a district court's award of attorney's fees, and we're asking that you assume that role again here. In total, we're asking that you remand the case for a new trial on all issues. Alternatively, at least to remand for a new trial on damages, or to remand for the district court to consider a remitter on the damages and attorney's fees awards. That's all I have. I thank you very much for your time and the opportunity to address your honors today.
Thank you, Mr. Newmeister. Thanks to all, counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement. And